Hi, I'm Lights Camera Jackson with the LCJ Q&A, and joining me is the creator of Nickelodeon's brand new animated series, The Loud House, Chris Savino. Chris, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it so much.
You're welcome, and I got to tell you, I saw on your Twitter today, as we are talking right now, is your 25th anniversary in animation. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much. You picked the perfect day to do it. It is exactly 25 years to the day that I made my way out to California.
Holy cow, that's fantastic. You going to celebrate after this interview?
I'll maybe take a nap.
That's a good start. That's good. That's not bad.
And, I think there's no better celebration than having a show that's going to be launching on Nickelodeon. It's perfect timing.
We'll get to the Loud House in a second. I got to start out by asking you about the shows you really grew up watching when you were growing up. The shows you watched as a kid, especially the animated series.
Wow, that is a good question. I watched a lot. We had some repeats of Rocky and Bullwinkle, all the Jay Ward shows, Underdog, Popeye, and some Looney Tunes. I loved cartoons. I loved watching them, but I think that the comic strips are the things that really spoke to me. We had, that was our form of entertainment, the daily newspaper and the Sunday paper with the color Sundays, and that was the thing I wanted to do. I wanted to have my own comic strip. We had reprints of the Peanuts and Pogo around the house, having mostly older siblings, so those were there, and I always read them, including Mad Magazine. I'll throw that in there too. But the idea or the notion that people—I knew that people made cartoons. I don't want to sound like I had no idea, but I didn't realize it could be a job that I wanted to do, and I didn't even realize there were schools that taught it until my senior year of high school, of all things. The cable was relatively new. And I think TBS, it may have been one of the Turner networks, had purchased the rights to play the Looney Tunes, and I hadn't seen them in a long time, and so they would be on for maybe an hour and a half every day after school. So I just started watching them, seeing how fun animation was, and thought maybe that would be a good way to go. And of course, your senior year of high school, you're looking at colleges, and you're seeing these places that teach animation, especially CalArts. I switched gears. I started to study how animated cartoons or characters were drawn, not so much the ink and pen style of a comic strip, but real constructed characters with the cylinders and the balls and the shapes underneath and how they moved, just by watching, the Looney Tunes. And VCRs, of course, you could buy a VHS tape of the Looney Tunes compilations and pause them and just draw off the screen, unlike drawing off the newspaper. I thought you had to go to school for something like that. I didn't dream for a second that you could just maybe learn on the job, as it were. And being from a family of 10, I didn't think that I could, A, I didn't know if I was talented enough to get into those schools, and B, I didn't think I could afford to go to those schools.
You brought up an interesting thing, because I was going to ask you about Charlie Brown and the Peanuts Gang, because the main character in the show is an 11-year-old boy named Lincoln Loud, who has five older sisters and five younger sisters, and he's presented as sort of the outcast of the bunch, and he narrates the stories at times talking directly to the screen. So did you really model some of the elements of the show after Peanuts and Charlie Brown?
I think the aesthetic of the show, definitely, because it has that Sunday strip kind of feel to it, and I think we all unanimously agree that the Peanut specials hold something near and dear to our heart that is so controlled and so evenly paced. And, of course, we've changed and we need more stimulation when we're watching these things. But, why can't we spend some time on this character for a moment? Let them sit there and think about something on the screen. Does it have to be filled with a dialogue or a joke or some visual joke at all times? And it's just something that has just always stuck with me. Now, if you went and pitched a show and said, I want it to be like the Peanut specials, everyone will say, no, you can't do the Peanut specials. That just doesn't work anymore. And to a degree, it's true. But I think if you've got really strong, funny characters and that you're going to get humor at some point in the storytelling, or chaos, or comedy, or slapstick, that you can take those breaks, those kind of pauses in between the chaos, and take a breather and let a character really sometimes look like they're thinking about what their problem is and what they're going to do about it. And then Lincoln speaking to the fourth, you know, breaking the fourth wall was, I think it just kind of came out of a really idea early on about it being kind of like Ned's Declassified School Survival Guide, where he was going to teach us what it was like to survive in a big world, in a big family. And we quickly realized that, you know, all kids go to junior high, so that's more relatable, but not all kids have siblings, especially 10 of them. Mm-hmm. So him teaching us didn't really mean much, but him inviting us into his world and saying, this is how I survive, and then to have him have some sort of sounding board, being the audience, it made us feel invited and welcome into his life, and so we could A, laugh with him, and B, laugh at him at the same time.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
And it's just something that stayed. We didn't, you know, there are some episodes that don't have it, and it's perfectly fine, and it's not jarring if you haven't seen it in a couple episodes that suddenly he does turn and talk to the audience. It's just still, it's an accepted thing in the series, so when it happens, it's not like, oh, I forgot, he hasn't been talking to us. It's, oh, right, hi again.
And you pitched the concept of the Loud House to Nickelodeon, but in such an interesting and incredible way. I've read a little bit about this, but I would love you to tell me the whole story about this incredible Nickelodeon animated shorts contest.
The shorts program is great. You know, I was at Disney for 5 years, and when Jenna Boyd offered an overall deal to come over, she said, one of the good things is we do this shorts program. They had done, I think, 13 the year before. And she said, part of your overall deal, you'll get one of the shorts, which I thought was great. I hadn't made something of my own since Cartoon Network days when they were doing their shorts contest as well. So the contract stated that I pitch 3 ideas, and they would pick one. And I did. I pitched 3 ideas, and the one that they picked was the big family idea, because they said, well, you know, we've been looking for a big family show. And the original pitch was rabbits, and it was a boy rabbit who had 25 sisters, because, you know, rabbits multiply, and I thought that was a funny joke. But they're all the same age, and they were from the same litter, I guess, if rabbits have litters. And it was just about the chaos of navigating, like, a literal sea of sisters in this show, and it had to be one boy so he would stand out. If there are other boys, it was like, well, how do I make this one character stand out from the other boys? So all girls was kind of settled on really early on. And you know, I wanted to do funny animal. I had just come off of a human based show at Disney, and like, well, I want to do fun and slapstick cartoon. And you know, they picked the rabbit one, and, you know, I pitched the story of this character having to get to the bathroom, running the gauntlet of all of his sisters. And at the time, Jenna Boyd, who was our executive in development, suggested that they be human. I think that she had, you know, awareness that the audience was ready for human-based show, or that Nickelodeon was ready to buy a human-based show, having just purchased 3 funny animal cartoons that year, that she just felt my chances would be better. And she was looking out for me, and she was right. And as soon as she suggested humans, I mean, we adjusted the number of characters, obviously, from 25 down to 10, but everything started falling into place for it. It started to feel like the ideas were becoming more relatable and grounded rather than silly and slapstick. They were pulling from real experiences. I mean, we've all experienced the notion of having to go to the bathroom really bad and screwing up by waiting to the last minute and then having to deal with every single thing blocking you as you're going down the hall. So it felt like, you know, we pulled away from that Ned's Declassified, this is how I survive, to here is a relatable thing that we can all understand. And for this kid, it's always, you know, times 10, the conflict of it.
And having watched a few of the episodes, you're absolutely right. The storylines are very grounded, especially for an animated series dealing with hand-me-downs and sitting at the adult table instead of the kids' table and getting that last slice of pizza. So were these really things that happened in your life growing up with nine other siblings? Did you really base much of these scripts on things that happened to you when you were younger?
Well, the good thing is that because I think the storylines are relatable and grounded, is that everybody can input on that. The writers, you know, this happened to me when I was a kid, or that happened to me, my sister did this, or, you know, we all are throwing ideas out there. So to say autobiographical might be incorrect, but relatable for sure. And you get this sense, this authentic, I think is the right word, sense that some of the ideas are coming from actual experiences. There's that feeling, you're like, there's no way somebody could have made this up. This had to have happened to somebody. And a lot of times it has. And a lot of the times we are digging deep of, like, asking the questions of what are the things that a kid has to go through when they're young, that are not only things that someone with a lot of siblings will relate to, but someone with no siblings will relate to. So kind of, I guess, those universal ideas. And the pilot that, you know, is airing on May 2nd, the episode that is technically the first episode, kind of explores that idea of, like, we all know what I was there first means. You don't have to have siblings to know what that is. You learn it at school and you hear it at school, and to have to kind of fight your way to somewhere first to get the thing you want is not a sibling thing, but we take that and explore what that means for him. And then, of course, multiply it by 10, because he's not upsetting just one sister or one sibling in the house. He's got 10 people that he's kind of got to look out for and realize that if he upsets the balance of the house, that he's got to realize that and then correct it, again, times 10. Sometimes we have him correct it in one fell swoop, and sometimes he's got to correct it kind of individually, because they're all different characters. Sometimes they're not just one lump of sisters with one unified point of view, but there are 10 individual people with 10 individual points of view that his one thing that he wanted has screwed it up for all of them. So we take that idea, and a lot of the cartoon is him making up for the problems that he's caused.
And how challenging was it to come up with 10 different girl characters, each with their own distinctive style? And do you really think that girls who are going to watch the show will really appreciate this and pick out their favorite?
Oh, I hope so. You know, Jenna had put it most succinctly early on. She goes, one thing I love about this show, and this was early in development, which I was so happy to hear someone say, you know what I love about this show, that early, was that she said it's not pink versus blue. It's not about boys versus girls. It is about characters versus characters. So in kind of coming up with the distinct personalities, you know, I knew that they needed to be characters. But for the short, it had to be very obvious for one line of dialogue or one visual that you knew who they were. So they were really kind of one-dimensional at that point, but still characters nonetheless. You know, so making a list of characteristics that might be fun for a character, but also knowing that Lincoln was going to be, okay, he's the man with the plan. He wants to do A. So what are the 10 personalities that we can have that he can have the most conflict with and probably have the most problem with? And, of course, the oldest sister, you know, you kind of like, well, she's been put out. She's had to watch kids her entire life and babysit, and she's probably got one foot out the door and can't wait to turn 18. So that kind of dictates who she is in the short, and so on down the line. And there was a lot of mixing and matching. You know, the Lucy, who was kind of like the emo-ish 8-year-old, used to be 13, and it didn't work because it felt real that a 13-year-old girl might feel that way, but it wasn't until she became 8 years old that it was suddenly funny that she'd have these kind of huge existential kind of points of view about life and the afterlife at such a young age. So it just mixed and matched. And then, you know, the second to youngest, Lisa, who is Menza and considers herself above human, like, it's funny if a 4-year-old has a better vocabulary than the rest of the kids combined. So it was just a matter of trial and error. And there are a few passes of the of the storyboard for the short that have those different characters in them. I don't know if they'll ever see the light of day, but they're there, and it was just kind of trial and error, but for the most part, it was figured out. And then the great thing about having such a wonderful group of writers on the show is that they have taken those characters and made them real, like, multifaceted, living, breathing characters that, yes, you can say this one is the bossy one and this one is the, you know, the fashionista and this one is the sporty one, but beyond that, who are they? And they've, you know, discovered that, and I think through being able to do multiple episodes that we've started to tell stories through their point of view. It's still Lincoln's episode, but they're the ones who have the problem in the story that needs to be solved, and then we get to learn more about them than I really ever believed you could. And it's great because it just kind of, you know, you've got 10 personalities to put against Lincoln, but then you've got all their facets that then you can also use against Lincoln. So it's almost like you've got 20 or 30 different characters depending on what conflict you need to arise out of it for Lincoln that you can use. And it makes, not that storytelling is easy or not that coming up with stories is easy, but it certainly makes one's life easier that if you've got an idea for Lincoln that he wants to do this, you've got like 30 or 40 points of view that you can throw against him and help tell the story.
And I'm sure it was crazy coming up with all the different names as well.
Well, the good thing is this. Well, originally when it was rabbits and it was 25 of them, they were all B names because that was like the only letter that had that many female-sounding names that we could use. Mm-hmm. And then when it went to 10 sisters for the show, mm-hmm. I got rid of the B names, and just, again, once it became human, I started pulling from my life. And I have, my five sisters are all L names and all four letters, and those were the first five. Lori, Lisa, Lynn, Luann, and Lana are my sisters, and I only needed five more. And oddly enough, those mm-hmm. five names existed in my life, and I just didn't realize it, plus the four letters. It was just such a happy accident. You know, I had a wiener dog named Lola. My mother-in-law had a wiener dog named Luna. Lucy and Lily were two names that my wife and I had picked if we'd ever had a girl. We didn't. We had three boys. And then Lenny was just kind of based off of one of the characteristics in the early development. It was a character from, she was like Lenny from Of Mice and Men, kind of like the doesn't know her own strength but a super sweet character. Which ultimately changed, but I changed the spelling of it to be L-E-N-I just to match the four-letter thing. And that's kind of where it came from. It was really just, you know, if you, you know, want to pinpoint something that I actually pulled from my life, it's those names. Characteristics, no, my sisters don't match those.
Aren't quite like that.
Yeah, no, but they, you know, they appreciate the use of their names. I think they're quite flattered, and it's something for them to hopefully brag about. I don't know if they even brag about it, but I hope they do.
And you're also one of the writers of the show's theme song and the closing credits song as well. To me, it seems like a lot of shows these days, especially on primetime TV, have either very quick theme songs or they don't do a theme song at all. So how important was it to you to have the show have a musical element?
You know, it's very important. Like, growing up, 80s, I suppose, I seem to remember having at least a minute for an opening title song, and I felt like that just set up the whole show for you, told you exactly what the show was, especially live-action shows. And, you know, I bet you everybody who you say, hey, do you remember the Silver Spoons theme song, at least can start singing it, or Who's the Boss, or, you know, any one of those shows, Growing Pains, that just felt like, here's what the show is, and here you're about to get it. I knew I didn't want to do a kind of a clips music video of what existed inside the episode. I just wanted to kind of do something more special, and mm-hmm. you know, in the credits, it kind of shows you the comic strip homage that's going on in there by giving it more texture, those panels that are surrounding them, and then really flat colors, and then by the time Lincoln comes together with his sisters on the couch, you're in a full color warm world for him, showing that he's, you know, in the chaos of his household, there's nothing more warm than everybody sitting on the couch together. That's really like boiling it down, but I think that, you know, I love theme songs, and we only have 30 seconds to sell that, and I wrote a ton of lyrics that was probably like a 2-minute song, and the geniuses of the people who wrote the main theme took some of those lyrics, reworked them, and reworked, you know, worked in some of their own lyrics, and I think made a song that is absolutely an earworm. I think more people go, gosh, that song is stuck in my head all day long. I'm like, yes, that's exactly what it is. If you're singing it, maybe it'll remind you that you want to watch it.
good.
And they're amazing. These two did a great job. And then the end theme song, one of the lines of lyrics is the same from the beginning one, so you can see that they all kind of had the same lyrics to work from. But it was down to those last two. I had to pick one. And I felt like the one that was the one that we chose for the main theme really kind of launched you into the show. It got you excited, and it made you want to watch it. And the other one was a little bit more indie, but it was different, and I knew there was something that I loved about it. I'm like, let's not discount this one yet. But it just didn't give you that, I don't know, that throw me into a cartoon kind of feeling. Mm-hmm. And I just asked one day, I was like, yeah, I guess it can't hurt to ask things. I was like, well, do we have to pick one? Can we buy them both and maybe put this as an end theme song? And, you know, the executives were like, heck yeah, we can. Like, why not have two songs instead of one? Like, absolutely. So, you know, both got to be picked. And frankly, both of those songs were as exactly how they were turned in. It wasn't like there were any changes. It just, they just, something that they keyed into about what they felt the show was came through in those songs. The only problem is we had to make each one of them like 2 seconds shorter. So there's like a piece that's missing out of each of them that I remember, and it's taken me a long time to get used to that missing piece, but no one else knows. well, maybe now they do. that's really important to me, especially even on theme, ending theme songs. It's like, yeah, you watched the show, and now here's this little ditty to kind of get you out of the show and move on to your next thing. And they're both fantastic. And they loved them both so much that they, you know, we paid for extended versions of both. The little music video that came out, I think 2 weeks ago, is an extended version of the theme song turned into like a real song, and it's got like actual song pieces in it, like the bridge and all that stuff, and it gets to that slow point, and like, wow, this is great. But you know, the end theme as well has an extended version, which we'll hopefully get to play online soon enough.
And I'm sure a dream come true for you as well was to be able to go to Comic-Con and have the show be represented at Comic-Con. What was that experience like for you last year?
You know, I try not to think about it because I would probably pass out. It's super surreal. You know, I see somebody's cartoon come on the air, let's just say Harvey Beaks and Carl Greenblatt, and I see like, wow, it's your show is launching, and look at all the ads and all of this stuff, and it's on the air, and it must feel great. And then when it's your own, it's so surreal, you can't even think about it in that way anymore. To me, it's like, well, there's this thing I've been working on for a year and a half now, 2 years, and, you know, I see all of my mistakes, and I see all the things that I wish I had done, and it doesn't feel like a cartoon anymore. It just feels surreal. So if I really stopped to think about it, I think I would probably break out in a cold sweat. I mean, it is such... I see that for other people. I say, oh my God, it's such an achievement to sell a show and get a show on the air, because we know the odds are so slim to actually do it. But to see somebody get that achievement, I'm so happy for them. But when it comes to myself, it's like, I wish I could step out of myself and say, yeah, you did it. But for me, it's like, oh, it's just kind of happening. And it's hard to describe, I guess, unless it's happening to you. But again, I think that it is overwhelming if I really stopped to think about the achievement that's happened. Also, the notion that something that you've been working on for 2 years with a talented group of people is finally going to be out on the air, and people are going to see it finally, and of course judge it. You know, you can't please everybody, and everyone's going to have their opinions. But you know, I didn't realize it was affecting me until like 2 months before the air date, when they announced what the air date was going to be. I started having anxiety dreams. Like, I didn't realize I was thinking about it so much, but there it is. You know, you get dreams every night about failures, but you know, the way your brain changes things around. And but you know, you can hope that, you know, we've done our job and hopefully we've made a good cartoon. We love it, and I think that ultimately you kind of make it to please yourself, and if you please the audience at the same time, well, then that's really icing on the cake.
And last question for you. This is, The Loud House is the 37th Nickelodeon animated series ever.
Yeah, you're making me sweat now.
So out of the other 36, which one is your all-time favorite?
Oh, man, you would. I would say, you know, it has to be the early ones, because I think that there was a you know, gosh, I should say Ren and Stimpy because John Chris Faluza gave me my shot in animation, and, you know, I'll thank him till the day I die. But I have to say Rocko's Modern Life, looking back on it, it was like the Wild West. There were these young people who were making cartoons and I think figuring it out as they went along. Nickelodeon was a young network and didn't quite have the bigness at stake as it does currently as a big network, owned by an even bigger network, Viacom. But then it was just, we were making cartoons to make ourselves laugh, and figuring things out and trying things, and really not that we didn't care, but I think that there was a carefree kind of environment going on right there. And same with the executives, you know, Mary Harrington and Vanessa Coffey. I just think they knew they were at the beginning of something, and knew to let what I guess is currently called creator-driven, let the creators make their show. I mean, who better to make the show than the people who conceived of it? You know, who were they to step in and say what's funny or what's not funny? Although they did and probably had some smart notes. But, you know, there's a feeling about it in watching that show that there was like this unbridled passion for what everybody was doing at the time, and the collaboration amongst all the artists. Looking back, I think I was 20 at the time, to go from Ren and Stimpy, where it's all these people who had been making cartoons for such a long time and were so seasoned at it and knew everything, and to these guys that were, you know, it's their first jobs and they're having fun and figuring things out and just threw things at the wall to see what would stick. And there's something about it that holds a not only a nostalgia for working on it at the time, but a period in cartoon history, at least the last 25 years, that felt like we were on the verge of a new, I hesitate to say golden age, because, you know, for most people it'll always be golden age, but just a new age of cartooning and how they were made and how that you could bring, to a sense, relatively grounded and relatable material to this kind of wacky world of cartoon animals and have it resonate with people in a way that hadn't in, almost forever, you know, and there hadn't been a show like that before.
Well, Chris Savino, congratulations on 25 years, and congratulations on The Loud House, and best of luck with it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You are welcome. The Loud House premieres Monday, May 2nd at 5 p.m. Eastern, with new episodes airing every weekday throughout May on Nickelodeon. I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson with the LCJ Q&A.